Right. No, that data set actually was geared towards more mental health outcomes. It just so happened that it included some variables that would provide some insight into this. So that's why we thought, well, let's just look at the data and see what it says. But I think those kinds of areas are the next places to go. Right. Thank you. And I'll now introduce Pam Tao Lee to, oh, sorry, Denora Barton Antonio. Sorry. Thank you all.
Good morning. I'm Denora Barton, and this morning we are going to be focusing on the three principles that we feel are really important in order to address full and equal participation of English-speaking workers in programs that are focused on workplace health and safety. And we don't have any financial interest in this presentation either. We feel that in order to provide equal and full participation for non-English speakers, there's got to be a safe and culturally appropriate environment for learning where critical thinking and problem solving can take place. We need to learn the political and social environment that impacts and influences non-English speaking workers to act, and we need to develop partnerships based on mutual respect and equality. We know, but just by looking at the room and seeing so many familiar faces, that many of you are familiar with some of the issues that we have to make sometimes when it comes to providing programs that provide equal language and cultural programs. And we are constantly facing with issues such as, where do we allocate the funding? How do we allocate the time? How are we going to pilot test? Who's going to be our target audience? How are we going to evaluate our programs? And because of limited time, I'll just use an example that I believe that many of us have experienced in some different ways with the programs we do. Let's say in our work plan, we have proposed to develop and create a program that will have training in English and Spanish. And we take about 3 months with the piloting, the evaluation, the designing, the layout, the printing, to create the program in English. And we're really happy with the program, and we're meeting our deadlines. But then we realize that our deadline is so close, and we only have 2 weeks left to do our translation program. And sometimes, even with the best intention, with the best knowledge, with the best expertise, we still make mistakes. And we come up with programs that not necessarily meet our expectations and are not necessarily meeting our standards of excellence and don't compare to the programs that we provide in English. The good news about some of the mistakes that we're facing is that there are some lessons that we can learn from the health and healthcare system. I was going around the exhibition halls, and there's a lot of programs that have made efforts and created really good material in English, primarily English and Spanish. But still, we don't see very many examples on health and safety. We still need to do more health and safety programs. And also, the good news is that the official websites like OSHA, EPA, NIOSH have come up with a very significant improvement. There's a great effort made to provide really well-written material. There are some programs where we still have to make some improvements, and in preparation to this presentation, we did some search and found that there are some official sites that have some significant problems. And we have prepared a packet for you, and in the packet, there's one example that has a very significant problem. It's a disclaimer from the Mine Safety Administration. And this is the disclaimer of the translation process that they're using. They're using machine to translate their website. And they're asking people to offer suggestions and to give recommendations on how to be changed. But when we go back about the allocation of time, I keep wondering, how much time do they really prepare to do this? And then in your packet, we have prepared a packet with some information for you. I highlighted some of the translation of some of the documents, which makes no sense at all. Some of the sentences are totally a literal translation done by a machine. So this is a serious problem, and in my opinion, this is not acceptable, because in particular, this industry has many hazards for workers, and workers are dying. And if they're reading this type of information that is totally confused and it doesn't make sense, it just keeps us wondering, what was the commitment of cultural and language equality? We also, in your packet, there's a survey that was conducted by Purdue University. They conducted a survey in Louisiana after with some of the Latino workers that are helping out to rebuild after the Hurricane Katrina. And they found that only less than 20% could really understand the jargon used, the language, the term used by the OSHA training that they have received to do all this rebuilding. And they also found that less than 3% in some cases understand the training that is being provided to them. Just looking at this room and looking at some familiar faces, I can tell that there are some lessons that we have learned from this process, that it really takes a strong commitment of time and energy to provide programs that are equally and culturally balanced and that provide language and cultural equality. It is really critical to involve workers, and it's also really critical to provide, I'm sorry, that was a typo, it's good bilingual training, with trainers that understand the issues and understand health and safety issues. The importance of culturally appropriate methods. And this needs to be done in a comfortable and safe environment. And what we're going to do today, Pam is now going to share with you some of the programs, a program that she is conducting right now, where the principles where we talked about that need to be conceived to provide cultural language and equality have been conceived since the very beginning of the program. And they are not just a task. They have been a priority since conception. Pam.
Yes. Hello, everybody. So this is our message. Before you go to sleep tonight, we've made this so that this is going to be waking you up in their sleep, to make this a priority, not a task. So remember that. It's her fault. How do I do this? Oops. So one of the things in terms of the principles that Denora talked about is making it a safe and culturally appropriate learning experiences. And so the examples I'm going to be using here are from a work that we're doing right now in San Francisco Chinatown with restaurant workers. But these kinds of examples and things I'm going to talk about, I think apply to all the work that we're doing with workers, no matter what. So I'm coordinating a community-based participatory research project that's focusing on the 1,000 workers in the area called San Francisco Chinatown and studying the relationship of work and to their health. And there's a restaurant core group that is the partners on this. And this core group is not only involved in like crafting purpose of the study and giving it guidance, but they're also involved in delivering the workshops and leading the meetings. And so one of the key elements is that the workers being involved in all the aspects, and I'm going to just talk just a moment on this whole part of workers being able to facilitate the worker meetings on this associated with this study. and leading workshops for workers who are going to be the surveyors for the studies. And I think one of the key things is lots of clapping, lots of encouragement. That is just so vital in allowing, her name is Asuro, and she is a restaurant worker, came to the community organization involved in back wage campaign. Out of that campaign, she has become a worker leader now in Chinatown. She can go into a restaurant with leaflets, size up that the boss isn't there, the managers aren't there, go right into the kitchen and distribute leaflets to the workers. I mean, this whole process has really empowered her to act. But there are other elements besides lots of clapping and encouragement. Is the training of trainers program that we've developed, which where myself from LOHP and the university, we do a draft outline of the sessions and the objectives and things like that. But then we work with the community organizer, and that's Fei Yi. She's a worker. She's worked in the factories in China, and now she's been here in the U.S., and she's an organizer in Chinatown now. We work with her and others from the group to develop the training outlines, refine it, and we work together to deliver the training to the workers. And then the next step is the workers themselves then deliver the training to the community and engage them. And here is a training of the surveyors that are going to be launching the project. Actually, it launched this week. But providing a safe learning environment is just not enough. The second principle in terms of understanding the political and social environment, for us, that meant that it was really important for us to know the community group's strategic plan for change. What is their plan for change? And some of the elements that I really needed to understand so that I could help coordinate and facilitate the project to help that are, what is their program for leadership development and skill building? What are the campaigns that they foresee launching in the next year and 2 years? What are some kind of the research needs that they really want this project to help bolster? What are some of the alliance building aspects of this? What's their media plan? And finally, what kind of policy and legislation do they hope to see coming out of this? And so it's vital that we really take the time to understand that and help funnel all of our activities into promoting that. So as a result, from my experience in doing this, is that the work that we're doing is really an investment in leadership development and really building the labor movement and the worker movement and worker power to really speak for themselves to categories of organizations that really help promote that. People already know in terms of unions, but also in terms of for immigrant workers, worker centers playing a vital role in doing that. So the last thing I wanted to focus on in terms of the principles is around the principle of mutual relationships. And one of the mutual relationships that are based on trust and respect, and part of the packet here are some of the lessons that we've learned in terms of developing partnerships. We wanted to share with you our work in checklists for partnerships. But one of the things that I wanted to share is about power dynamics. When you're having these partnerships and the power dynamics, this particular partnership brings together the Department of Health, Public Health in San Francisco, UCSF Medical School, the School of Public Health, the Labor Occupational Program that I'm part of, and the community organization in Chinatown. And so, you know, power. Right now, Fei Yi here is the only worker representative with personal experience on this. On the 13th, we're going to have three more worker representatives join the partnership. But one of the measures in terms of, for me to, in terms of evaluating the effectiveness of this partnership and the steering committee, she's participating in the steering committee, might have forgotten to announce that, is that we are able to move Fei Yi when we are talking about the meetings and saying, how does it go, and you know, your participation, this is an independent evaluator, moving for her to say less and less, the meeting was good, right? And less and less to say, I'm still learning, to more of Fei Yi being able to say, well, you know, at the next agenda or on this agenda, I want to add this item. Or in my opinion, this is what I'm seeing. Or I would like to recommend such and such. We want to see that to happen more. And to me, I think it's very critical. And so one of the constant things of the work that we're doing is evaluating the power dynamics and the work of the steering committee. Because all of this work that we're doing has to lead to worker power, worker knowledge, worker skill, worker action, and a unified labor movement, a unified worker movement. So, in conclusion, Butch, that's why, for me, language and cultural equality has to be a priority and not a task. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to all the speakers for contributing to our section and all of this information, and also for staying on time. So we have plenty of time for questions, and I guess we could all just be up here and take questions randomly and direct it to specific speakers. Sure, you in the blue.
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's been suggested there's